Hello and welcome to AMO Kenzoku Episode 60. We are a group of four bubblegum crisis boomer otaku who wanted an excuse to talk about anime, manga, and any related subjects we find interesting. The Kenzoku are...
Hey all, I'm Mike.
Hello, I am Nick.
Hey, I'm Sam.
And I am Dylan. This episode is being recorded on the 17th of October, 2024. Today we'll be discussing a potpourri of AMO topics since that have been released since March, because we haven't had any seasonal discussion since then. Probably not going to have enough time or detail to go into major spoilers, so we'll just all discuss things that we think are cool and or not cool. With that, I say Hashin! So, yeah, we looked back and realized it had been since beginning of March that we last recorded an episode that was over covering the winter season of some things. And we've just been busy doing other stuff, and so we haven't reviewed or gone over any newer or older or anything else reviewed. So with that, I'm going to attempt to kind of go through a little bit seasonally. I didn't do my deep dive on the seasons on my anime list, so we'll kind of scan it with ones that I think I see people have viewed or whatever, and if I miss anything, cut in. So with that, I'm going to crank back the Wayback Machine to spring, which apparently was a long time ago now, and looking at a couple of the more popular shows that were up there from spring, there was Kaiju number 8 and Konosuba season 3 and My Hero Academia season 7, the Wasted Windbreaker, because it was not about anyone farting as best we know. There was, I forget if it was the first or the second season, but Spice and Wolf.
I'm having some deja vu. Did we talk about this season?
I feel like
a little bit of it, because I remember distinctly discussing Spice and Wolf.
Yeah, we kind of did came into a little bit. Yeah, so I think we might have actually talked about the very, like, either things we were looking forward to or not, because, like, most of these shows didn't air until April, and we recorded the episode in March, so.
Oh, okay.
But Spice and Wolf might have been a continuation, because that one was 2 seasons. So I'll start off that season with a show that I didn't mention, which I'm still actually kind of watching a little bit of, which I found is pretty cool, is the Bartender Glass of God. It's a 13-episode show about folks that are trying to make a super fancy bar at a new hotel in Tokyo that's opening, and they try to recruit this super bartender who's elusive. It's cool in that it's basically it's partially sponsored by the Yamazaki Distillery Company.
Talk about is the company Yamazaki, or are you looking for a different name?
I think it's the parent company of Yamazaki.
Talking about Suntory?
Yes, Suntory.
Suntory basically owns all alcohol.
Yeah.
In
Japan. Yeah, they own all the alcohol in Japan. The thing I like about it is I am a amateur bartender person. I make drinks, I do stuff on my own, I make my own fancy ice, and then I brand it and all sorts of ridiculous things. And the detail they put into the bottles and the making techniques and the way the drinks look, and that you can watch this show and actually learn a bit about some drinks and stuff while having it still be kind of like a fun, entertaining show is pretty cool. So if you're interested in that, it's kind of like a sports anime for cocktails.
So it's like what anime and manga are best at, right? Blending those kinds of things in a very entertaining way.
Yeah. And it's a cool show. So I'm still watching it. It's very much kind of does it in a very slice of lifey kind of way too. So it's not super intense, but it's fun. So if you haven't checked it out and you're interested in that, or you're like, I want to learn more about cocktails, go watch that show. It's cool.
Can I call out something from this season? I watched this show, Tonari no Yokai-san, and if any of you are on my anime list, please look at the key art, and then I can tell you that I stopped watching this show with like 2 or 3 episodes left because it was torture. It was so cruel to watch. It looks like a very happy, silly show, but it's extremely depressing, and they try so hard to make every episode make you cry, and that just got way too heavy. So don't be fooled by that show.
Don't be fooled by Peugeot Head.
Yes, yes. Which is, that is a guy who loved his car so much that after his wife died, his car became a yokai, and they lived together. It's, in a way, like, the lore of the show is kind of interesting. It's about how, like, normal people and things turn into yokai, and, you know, it's kind of like Harry Potter, where they got the magical world, where there's, like, a kind of, almost like a ministry of yokai kind of thing. But it's just, they try way too hard to be sad and depressing and not enough, like, happy and uplifting, and that's not fun. I don't want that.
I'm guessing the car yokai was not named Christine because they did not want to get sued.
Yeah, no, it was definitely not named that. I actually even forget his name.
Something. Sad Man 3.
Yes. Sad car. And he does turn back into a car, and the guy drives around in the car, too. So, like, it's extra weird.
I mean, how do you have that and not have it actually be funny?
I mean, that's the sad thing, right? You look at this and you're like, oh, this will be goofy. Look at the hijinks that are possible in this. Like, you've got the little cute girl Kappa who's got the, you know, the Kappa bald spot. Like, surely there will be some hijinks. But no, it's all very sad. People dying all the time. And then there's like there is a running plot, which they tease in the very beginning. But they basically don't touch it the whole show. And so it's like, well, that was the interesting thing that was kind of keeping me watching. And instead of tackling that, they're just tackling all this depressing stuff. So anyways, that's enough of ranting about that. But if you like crying, go for it.
It must have been something to have you bail with 3 episodes left.
It kept going, and I was like, this is too much. And, you know, because we were watching this at dinner, and, you know, usually we just kind of try and stick through. We don't quit shows. But I was like, I'm just not enjoying this show. Like, it's just trying to make me sad, and I don't want that. It's no fun. I could watch something else. There are a bunch of other shows that we weren't watching because of this one.
So. Yeah. Limited time. Other shows, I'm just looking to the couple of the continuing ones was Demon Slayer, Slime Reincarnated, as I said, My Hero Academia Season 7. Those are some of the more popular continuing ones. Any of those? Kaiju number 8, I think most of us watched that. I don't think we really discussed the anime too much.
We actually didn't. It was funny because I think a couple of us were hyping it up a lot, and then just the conversation never happened, which I almost feel like is appropriate because it's not like I have not watched all of it, not because I didn't want to, but just because things came up and then I never got back into it. But considering how I believe it was my most anticipated from last year's Kenzoki, I would say it's slightly under-delivered, just a little bit. Not to say that it's bad, but just I think I overhyped myself on it. Because I enjoyed the manga and because Kara is involved. But honestly, it's good. I would recommend it, but I wouldn't say it's elite. Like, I wouldn't put it up there with like Oshinoko, for example. But it's definitely very, very watchable. Like, I would put it right there with like a recurring, you know, shonen series that I've been watching. So,
yep, I 200% agree with that assessment. It's exactly how I feel.
Yep, I agree. It'd be one of those ones. Someone's like, "Hey, I want a cool show to watch." It'd be like, "Go watch Kaiju Number 8. It's a cool show."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not gonna, you know, be the second coming of a savior, but it's good. You'll enjoy it. If you like anything shonen, it'll be very enjoyable. And quality is good, I would say. Not the best, but good.
Yeah, you wouldn't be disappointed watching that show. There's some really choice animation in parts of it.
For sure.
And yeah, even when it's not great, it's still good, I think.
Agreed.
Let's see here. Anyone else have anything from the spring that they would like to particularly bring attention to in some way?
I have two I can briefly say. I didn't finish these, but I watched the first episode of the Train at the End of the World, and that show was really interesting, but I kept forgetting about it, so I don't know what that means, but I do intend to go back to it. I just keep forgetting that it's there since it's so far back now. I recommend people check out the first episode and see what you think. Also, I may have mentioned this before, but out of kind of a morbid curiosity, I did check out Girls Band Cry. I only watched the first episode, but I plan to try and watch more. I had to download it because obviously nobody's licensed it. It's not bad. It's intriguing. So I want to try and watch more of that too.
Oh, interesting. It's Toei. I didn't realize they did that. Produced it. Huh, weird. Does not seem like a Toei thing.
No.
Seems like a Kyowani or, you know, one of more recent studio thing.
Well, except for this is the all CG show.
Oh.
Yeah, gotcha. Hence the morbid curiosity.
I see. Yeah, I would say my equivalent for that from that season is Go-Go Loser Ranger. Like, I was actually one I was really excited about, but then, like, I just got really busy, and then, like, I watched the first ep and then completely forgot about it. So I'll get back to it for sure.
But, oh, yeah, that was on my list as one I wanted to...
The key art's super cool. Like, I love the key art for it. So it wins, for me, it wins the key art wars for that season compared to... everything else, but yeah, I would say based off of EP1, it's hard to give like a real good. I think it's if you should know what to expect for a show of this premise. So if this is what you're looking for, you'll probably like it. Otherwise, it's going to be hard to gauge until I've watched more. So that's why I kind of didn't really talk about it.
Mm. Okay, just looking through two others that I was scanning through down here, and other stuff that I think was continuing at that point. I still haven't finished watching it, but during that time period, second half of Dungeon Meshi or Delicious in Dungeon was airing, and that show I think was probably exceeded my expectations on show.
Yeah, season I don't know if you want core two or whatever you want to call it, but second half is really good.
I have not watched that at all. I just keep not, and then time goes on and goes further in my I was very pleasantly over surprised with that show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, Mike, I saw that Urusei Yatsura was continuing there. I don't know if you've kept up with that or if you're waiting for a group watch or something.
The group watch is involving getting four of us together, so it's been way behind.
Okay. Anything else from that time period that you saw or were intrigued by?
No, I didn't catch much that period, and then even less from the following two, because life got crazy for a bit.
Yeah. Okay. The other one of note that we're going to pass on and not discuss is Konosuba 3, because it's worth and both not worth discussing.
Yeah.
It's great and terrible. You can guess, yes. Okay. And we can always come back if there's one of these shows we decided we want to do a full thing on, but I'm just going to kind of keep rolling through here, and I'm going to go to summer now. Notable shows from summer is Oshinoko Season 2. There's also Oshinoko Season 2, and I think there was another Oshinoko Season 2. I think those were the shows from the summer that I recall being of note. Of which, I watched none of those three shows, which may also be the same show, because I have not seen Season 2 at all yet.
You did finish Season 1, right?
I did finish Season 1.
Okay.
I just was clicking different buttons and stuff, and just did not click on starting Season 2, and it was one of those ones I felt like, okay, I don't want to get into this until I'm ready to get into it, and I just haven't been...
Well, it's all out now, so whenever you want to get into it, it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually behind on that one, so I'm looking forward to binging.
Same. Cool.
Okay, well, I guess as the only person that's watched it all. Yeah, I mean, if you enjoyed S1, then there's no reason you'll not enjoy S2. It continues the plot a lot. I would say the one kind of joke that I've been telling everybody, and I think the greater internet's been telling people, is the best action show of the summer is Oshinoko Season 2. mostly based off the premise that, this is not even a spoiler, but it literally continues off the end of Season 1 where it focuses on that stage play that Aqua gets cast in with, you know, with other players. And yeah, there's quite a bit of action, kind of like choreography that they have to do. And when they actually, air quotes, perform it, pretty dang great. Pretty great animation is what I can say. So yeah, best action show of summer is Oshinoko Season 2.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
Aside from that, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I may be one of the only people that watched much of summer. And when I say much of summer, I mean anything at all.
Yeah, I feel like there wasn't a ton. There's a couple other ones that I was kind of interested, but I haven't seen. Did anyone watch Terminator Zero?
No.
Oh, I've been meaning to. I hear good things about it. It's Netflix exclusive, so it makes it a little bit challenging for everybody.
Netflix,
to watch.
Production IG. So that's definitely one I've been curious about and just haven't clicked the button to start it yet.
Same.
Okay. I feel like it was... No, I feel like it was summer, but I don't see it listed here. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'll say it here is one that I did actually just watch tonight, the first two episodes of Rick and Morty, the anime.
I think that falls into fall, but maybe I'm wrong. But it's very recent, I know that.
But of course, it doesn't line up with Japanese seasons either. So
it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't see it showing up on the fall. Yeah.
I've been watching. Where is it viewable?
It is viewable on Max.
That's why.
The most split personality service that exists, where you get most popular shows are high drama from HBO mixed with My 1,000-Pound Sister.
so wild.
Yeah. But I watched the first two episodes of that, and in Japanese, subtitles seems fine. I thought it was pretty cool. I've watched all of Rick and Morty. It's definitely one that is not... I don't think you could watch it and be like, okay, cool, I know what's going on here, without knowing and having watched a good portion of Rick and Morty. Because it just jumps straight in with a whole bunch of characters that are never explained, and the premise and all the things about it. It's kind of like, it just assumes that you know all of these characters and their histories from at least like the first, like, five seasons of the show.
So, question for somebody else who has watched all of the other Rick and Morty, is it actually revolving around Rick C-137, or is that not disclosed yet?
I think it is.
Oh, okay.
It's always hard to know.
So it's just him speaking Japanese?
Yeah, I kind of like the voice. It's cool, though, because it's got a very different visual and story type aesthetic to it. And it definitely does a bunch of, like, effects and things, but I was kind of looking at that and thinking about that in context with the Berserk that we just watched, and I'm like, no, this looks good. Like, it has at least stylistically consistent within itself and pretty well done. I think it's kind of interesting just what a different story-type perspective, where it's very much a continuing story rather than being very much episodic. So I watched one, then I watched the second one. I'm like, all right, this is cool. I would definitely continue watching this. So, but again, if you don't know Rick and Morty or you don't like that stuff at all, definitely don't watch it, because it's not going to convert you. It's not like it's a complete guide in thing or something where you're going to go, oh, okay.
I've seen some Rick and Morty, I think the first season, but it's just one of those things where I think when I got into it, there was just so much out that I was just kind of like, all right, I saw season. I don't, you know. I don't know. I never felt pulled into it to watch a bunch, but I did enjoy what I watched.
I would say it didn't really come into its own until seasons 2 and 3. I think 2 and 3 are probably the strongest, and then varying degrees of based on different people's opinions. I still say it's quite very watchable beyond that, but it leans a little bit too much on being leaning on a particular plot line at that point, and instead of being its own thing, which was chaotic, but like very intentional in the chaos with seasons 1 through 3. But anyway, that's going into my opinion. Everybody and their mother has an opinion about that show, so yeah, you know, I'll leave it at that. But pivoting back into anime, I guess air quotes real anime.
Another one that I think I watched and was recommended was Elusive Samurai.
Yeah.
Was summer. And I didn't realize that one was actually from, like, because the art was so different looking, I feel like, in the manga than the key art there, that's like, you know, it's like 250 chapters in the manga or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Cloverworks' new thing. And man, animation and style, like design philosophy, is pretty stellar, I would say. Plot is okay. I think it's fine, but honestly, the animation and the color palette selection really carries it a lot. Does a lot of the heavy lifting for me. I don't know how you feel about it, Dylan.
I watched one episode, like, I thought it was cool, and just like many of the other shows here, I was like, oh, I should probably watch more of that, and then I just didn't.
Really cool opening and ending. I would say candidates for of the season probably right now. That being said, it was a little bit of a weaker season this year. Like, there's no clear number one in my opinion right now. So that could change.
Another one I'm still watching from summer is this Why Does Nobody Remember in This World? I don't know why it got me. It had some sort of interesting looking key art or something. It's actually, it's kind of a cool show. It's not really an isekai. It kind of is, but mostly it isn't. But it's kind of violent, ridiculous shonen action from Project Number 9. Do I recommend you watch it? No. Do I recommend you don't watch it? Nah. But it's, you know, fun action fantasy sci-fi type of thing. So if you want something that's stupid there to put on at a time, you can put it on, and I don't hate myself when I put it on.
That's important.
Yeah.
So it's a solid rating.
Yeah. I don't regret every life choice I've ever made when I put it on. It's got low ratings on my anime list, so I'm curious if the second half of the show turns to complete garbage. Another one I was curious, did anyone watch Isekai Suicide Squad?
That's no, one I really, really wanted to, and I never got to it, because I was actually pretty excited, just because it's such a outrageous premise to take these established Western, you know, comic characters that kind of, it's funny, I don't know if the timing was intentional or if it's just ironic, but like Suicide Squad, anything is like nearly untouchable here right now, because like the movies bombed, the video game bombed, so like there's all the opinions on Suicide Squad right now are like really, really low out here in the West. So seeing the original trailer for this, I saw, like, that was almost a year ago, it was like really interesting to me. So
yeah, same. The ending is really good. I remember
that. The animation looks stellar, honestly.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm curious on that one. It has very low MAL rating as well, so I'm curious if it's one of those ones that disappointed in some way, or they put all their work in the opening and ending and everything else is terrible.
Entirely plausible. Or it could be that the fan base that went to it was not normal anime consumers. So
I think Nick, you mentioned Shikanoko Noko Noko Koshintan, my dear friend Nokotan. Is that
literally that show is just an opening.
yeah.
It's what do the kids say now? It's peak brain rot. anime. Like, it is completely purposeless. And if you're... I feel like it went a little too ham with the... just being deranged and, like, making random references to be fair, some really obscure stuff, which I respected, but also other things that... It's just weird. Like, to me, it felt like watching 3 episodes felt the same as watching, like, 9 episodes. So... after like the first 3, it kind of doesn't really offer much different stuff. And then, yeah, is the opening super catchy? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I both bless and curse it at the same time, because sometimes I cannot get it out of my head. So, yeah. But
okay.
If you're looking for something truly brainless and just want to have, you know, something, it's easy on the eyes most of the time. Sometimes it does this weird, like, intentional drop in animation quality thing that I'm not. Doesn't work with this show so much, but it's okay. You will know if this show, if this is what you're looking for when you, within the first 3 seconds of watching the opening.
Well, I don't know. Maybe a little bit of the show will get you more of a taste, but yeah, it doesn't take long to get a taste for this show. I watched the first episode and I was kind of like, I laughed. But I was like, I don't know. I didn't feel like, yeah, there was much more to give me after the first episode.
I think the opening is good enough for me.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, that was satisfying enough.
Yeah. I'm not like slandering the show. But yeah. It's just not what I need right now is what I can say.
So if you need to clear your head, you watch an episode of Oshinoko and then you put on that opening after to clear out any feelings that you're having.
Yeah. Oh, what I will say about Oshinoko Season 2, going back to openings and endings. Openings and endings are definitely not like Idol and Mephisto level, in my opinion. Still really good opening.
Mm-hmm.
The ending, at first, I didn't love it. But then when I started listening to them, I'm like, they felt really nostalgic. And I realized I will need Sam, you and Dylan, I think, are the two that I would... I mean, we're all the same of age. But as soon as I started listening to it, it sounded so much like a Smashing Pumpkins song to me, and yeah. I need somebody to validate that for me.
I can hear that. It's very much like that
grungy, like 90s
rock.
Grunge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Good.
Yeah. So, yeah. I had the same feeling.
The more I listened to it, the more I really dug it. And I actually like the animation for it a lot now. Like, kind of the way it feels like a 90s music video, honestly.
Yeah. So, I was kind of on it at first because, you know,
it's not Mephisto.
Right. It didn't have that same hit that the other one did with all those great gags. But yeah, it did grow on me and I grew to like it a lot.
But yeah, that's it for me on Oshinoko Season 2. Just had to go back to that for a sec.
I wanna point out the two shows that I watched from this season that I thought were good. First I'll point out one that I think that was trash that I unfortunately, I watched the whole thing, which is the Osan Newbie Adventurer Trained to Death by blah, blah, blah. This is another one that we just started watching during dinner, and so we just went all the way to the end. And it's pretty garbage. The animation is one of the interesting things with watching bad shows, I wouldn't say this is bad, it's just extremely mediocre, is that it seems that even the shows that have not good animation still have moments where they just have really good animation, and this one did the same thing. Like when it counted near the end, they put in the money to like animate some fight scenes really well, and I commend them for that. But that's basically all it has going for it, though. Good stuff. I haven't finished this one yet, but the Too Many Losing Heroines. It's a harem-ish rom-com, except it's not really a harem. It's explicitly not a harem, but it has the look of a harem. That show is actually very entertaining and pretty funny. The characters were really great and entertaining and unique, and it's very well animated. There's the A1 Pictures. The opening is also really great. It's got this thing going on where like the credits are appearing on screen and the characters are kind of not interacting with the credits, but kind of like acknowledging that they are there in interesting ways. I recommend checking it out. Watch the first ep of the show and you'll know if you like it or not.
Oh, Speaking of, I actually have one more to add too. I totally forgot. This is another. I wish I watched more, but I didn't. Mayonaka Punch. It's the new PA Works.
How is that one?
I don't know. I only watched two episodes. I thought it was pretty interesting-ish. Not their strongest outing over the last couple of years, but I think it merits watching for sure. I would say it has some a little bit of a Call of the Night in it.
Yeah.
As far as like a vampire kind of dragging an otherwise loner-ish character into a chaotic situation. Other than that, I would say it's quite different. It's not real. The romance isn't really a thing in it, but it's got an interesting ensemble cast. It's a little. It kind of does the Tenchi Muyo Love Hina, like slowly assemble the wacky zany group of people that live in a house kind of thing. Uh-huh. So if that's not your thing, I would say avoid it. But despite that, I'd say it's worth watching. It's animated pretty well. PA Works, I think, has put in a pretty decent effort with it. And the premise is topical, like for recently, because it's about like a person who's basically part of like a live streaming team, and then they end up being like they get into a fight and end up like punching the other one out like while live streaming, so she gets kicked out of the group basically, and now she has to like restart as a solo streamer.
I don't really remember what put me off on this show exactly, but I do remember that I didn't like the kind of the influencer aesthetic of it all.
Yeah, I can see that being a turnoff, definitely.
And the way that the vampire main girl acted was, I don't know, I mean, that kind of turned me off with her obsession with the main character. I could see it being good. I could, you know, it wasn't bad. It just, you know, didn't feel like my thing, but maybe if I gave it more, it would grow on me.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of it.
Okay.
I guess I want to talk about one more.
Please.
That yep. I think this is my favorite show of the season. Well, Oshinoko, I much like Konosuba, I just don't talk about it because we all know. But a Shoshimin series, that How to Become Ordinary, this show was like, I saw it was like a detective show, and I love a good detective show, and watched the whole thing. It's magnificent. I really think that if you enjoy any of that kind of stuff, any of the kind of deduction kind of things, Columbo type stuff, it's like extremely low stakes Columbo. It's very entertaining. It's like these two kids who have some past and they don't really tell you about it. It's kind of inferred that there's something different about them, and they're trying to abandon their previous personas and be ordinary. And for one of these, for the boy, it's like he's a great detective and he loves solving, like, you know, quote unquote crimes or things. But the crimes are like, you know, oh, I lost my bag. Where's my bag? Or there's a the. If you watch this show, you have to at least watch through, I think, the second episode, where they spend most of the episode trying to figure out how this one character made this chocolate milk taste so good. and he made it without making a mess. And that's like this puzzle that they're trying to solve. And it's so good. And it's very hard to explain why, but it involves the way that they characterize these characters and how their individuality and their personalities come through and are very consistent. And also kind of, they act in unexpected ways. It's so good. You have to give it a chance, I think, if you like that stuff at all. It's very funny in a very kind of dry kind of way as well, which I also really like. So check it out.
All right. That sounds good. I like that. It's a studio Lapin Track that did, amongst not too many other things, at least here, they did Undead Girl Murder Farce.
Oh, well.
That was another one they did, I think, before that.
This was better animated than that one, I think, although there's no action in this one, really, so a lot easier.
Yeah. Okay. All right, getting some definite good stuff here. So moving on to fall, which is obviously still in the middle of broadcast here.
Mostly just starting for a lot of this still.
Yeah, most stuff a couple eps in.
But I feel like this is where most of our conversation will be had tonight.
So let's see here. So I'll start out with the good. I've seen episode one of Don Da Don, and it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to watching more of that. It was cool. Science Saru doing... It's one of those shows you're like, yeah, why doesn't everybody just make cool anime like this?
Okay, exactly. It's just cool looking. It looks so cool. Just based off of character design and animation, everything. It just looks so good. Plot aside, like... Most
hilarious.
It is, but mm-hmm. I can see it being a turnoff based on ep one for some people. But I would say stick with it because not all of it is that sort of content. But
oh, I see what you mean.
But about red hot openings! Like freaking mm-hmm. creepy nuts hits on just another banger opening, and like oh, the first like what. 8 seconds of animation in that is like some of the best animation I've seen in quite a long time. Like just all the characters doing their pose, striking their poses. It felt like such like a late 90s style kind of opening as far as just like, you know, real kind of effort on like high detail, like close-ups on characters sort of thing. I don't know if I'm mm-hmm. making any sense there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. Opening good.
And then, so far the show is great. I've read some of the manga and I heard it's getting animated. I was like, oh, I'll just see how it goes. And Science Saru, and so far is doing a great job.
Yeah, those guys, I was a little worried when, I forget his name. Who's the animator who used to head that studio, the founder?
Iwasa.
There we go. Thank you. Yes, Iwasa. Iwasa was the founder, and it was basically built around him. And then he left, and haven't heard from him since. And I think En Young Choi took over, who's another animator. And I don't see her in the credits on ANN, but I'm pretty sure she's in the show credits, but I don't remember what for. But anyways, seeing this show come out, it was like, I was a little worried that studio would kind of fall apart without him at the helm, but I think she's shown that she does great without him, and it's awesome to put out a show of this quality. Like, super pleased that they're still doing their thing, being unique and weird.
Yeah, I think this is the perfect pairing of studio with property. It's like that rare, like, perfect alignment. I don't think mm-hmm. there's a studio that could interpret, because Don Da Don's a really like offbeat manga already, in my opinion. For I would say something that's more leaning mainstream, it's still pretty different from a lot of the other mainstream stuff. So I think this was a really good pairing, and like you can see that Science Auto put a lot of effort into it. So I'm excited to see how it continues and if it's gonna go beyond a one core and, you know, actually become continuing, because historically Science Saru is mostly one and done's. So
yeah,
I'm interested to see what happens.
Interesting on that one too, is it's one of the, there's not a ton, but it's one of the ones that's on both Crunchyroll and Netflix.
Yeah. It's on all the major the two major ones here in the States.
I see on ANN, they list bunch of stuff. They actually also list Hulu, and they listed Apple TV, and I check, and they're not like streaming it for free as part of Apple TV Plus, but it is available for a simul purchase, which is interesting.
That's some interesting purchase sale. Maybe it's almost like an experimental sale model or something like that to see, all right, what do we get out of this? Anything?
Yeah, maybe. It's so $3 an episode. I'd never seen that before. So yeah, I thought that's interesting.
That's like the opposite of another show this season, where it's only available on like one distributor.
So let's spiral into that one. Heyo. So Uzumaki, that one has aired 3 episodes. I honestly don't know how many there's going to be total. It says 4 episodes total, so there's only one more episode. And it is only available on Max. And when I watched it, it didn't even have like subtitles.
What the heck?
Yeah, they weren't even like available there, or it was like the English closed caption or something. It wasn't the proper subtitle, so I just turned them off.
At least the free EP1 stream on Adult Swim was Japanese with English subtitles, so that's interesting.
Which was weird, because what was the other Max? Oh yeah, the Rick and Morty anime. That one had proper Japanese with English subtitles, so I was like, oh gosh, is this going to have nothing? But Uzumaki didn't. Maybe it has it more now. So I've watched apparently watched 3/4 of the show. I think that's the crazy part too.
Yeah. Oh, I got opinions.
All right, go.
All right. Well, I'll just say, despite the, I'll go with the good first. It's pretty obvious on EP1, a whole heck of a lot of effort was put into it because they really tried their. Qualify this. Nagahama and his team that it was assembled did a fantastic job in a lot of ways as far as effort put out. The more of it of EP1 I watched, the less I cared about certain, Sam, you were talking about the kind of weird crappy line CG overlay stuff. I paid attention to it less because there were parts that looked good that I was able to kind of distract myself with, but that all instantly was completely and utterly burned to ashes when they basically completely massacred the plot and hacked it up and tried. Basically, to me, EP1 felt like they were trying to make a sizzle reel for Uzumaki because they completely screwed the order up of the stories. Completely, in my opinion.
I mean, I feel like to a certain extent you could do that, but I don't know. I'm assuming that it was kind of significant. Ways.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess, spoilers ahead, but EP1 basically mashed together the main early story of Shuichi's dad, which is, I would say, the major kind of trigger for a lot of this follow-up like stories in Uzumaki. It mashed that up in parallel with the what was the other girl's name, the one with the spiral on the forehead.
I don't remember.
Well, forehead spiral, the iconic scene, right? They put her that in like right away, as opposed to I think it's like halfway in to the manga. And then additionally, they also like jammed in the snail storyline all into the same episode.
Wow,
and it felt completely. It felt incongruous and herky-jerky, and I did not like it at all. And so I am of the opinion that even now there is still not a palatable interpretation of Junji Ito anything in visual media. And it's really upsetting because this took so long and had so much money thrown at it. And EP1, and this is based on, the rest of this is based on hearsay because I haven't watched the rest, but Dylan can confirm or deny this. But my understanding is EP1 is considerably better looking than the remaining 2 eps that have aired so far, and it doesn't get any better. So if EP1's the best attempt at it, then I don't really care because it's already ruined for me. So Dylan, what's your take on it?
They definitely did the interesting thing, and it does continue with kind of cutting apart and re-stitching together different stories in ways, and some they give a little more time to and some less, and pull stuff in and out. The visual look is definitely the best in EP1. EP2 is, I can see why people are like, what the heck is this? Like, did you finish this?
It's a completely different team, right? Like, they changed animation teams in EP2.
I wasn't paying enough attention, but
it's for sure a different director. Only Nagahama only directed EP1.
Oh,
okay.
I'm pretty sure it's a whole different team.
Is he a series director at all?
Nope. Or episode 1 director. Period.
Oh, okay. And then episode 3 was I think that one looked better again, but it definitely follows that same style. So if you were upset by the first episode, don't continue. You'll just continue to be upset. But yeah, I think in some ways I'm like, I think it's, in some ways I kind of like it and think it is cool. Like, I like the visual style. I think in general it looks pretty good, particularly in Ep 1. But at the same time, am I like, is this a good thing that I'm like, oh man, I'm so glad that they made this because now it's going to be like awesome for everyone and people understand how great this is? And I'd be like, no, kind of like I had my opinion of the Berserk movies. I'm like, I just wish they hadn't done those because it doesn't.
Yeah, I think this is my Berserk movie because why? So I will say, voice acting is also great. Miki Shinichiro as Shuichi, he did a great job. He kind of does that going slowly going, you know, mad, like degeneration of the character really well.
Yeah.
But Mike, this goes back to the hacking the story apart. It completely ruins the pace because you're not getting the stories in the kind of sequence that was intended. So you're not seeing that slow breakdown of the character. It's really herky jerky, and it doesn't, to me, the pacing is completely ruined by the way they assembled it. Like, I very strongly feel that way. So I don't know why they did that. If it, again, I feel like maybe Nagahama, when he heard, like, oh, you're only going to get to do F1, he's like, fine, I'll just take all my favorite stories and throw them in F1 because screw you guys. I'm not saying he's that petty, but that's kind of what it seems like to me. Yeah, just why? And only 4 episodes, the completely mismanaged is what I feel about this whole project. Like, I think they screwed up. It was mismanaged. Timelines were bad. I know COVID messed this up a lot, so I will give that. I'll give those 3 years back to them because COVID really ruined a lot of things. So
wow, 3 years and 4 episodes.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it's not like anybody made 2 seasons of Ocean Oko in that time period,
right?
My mind is blown ever since I heard that Pat Labor movie 2 was like, what, 8 months or something like that?
Yeah, it's like 9 months from, okay, you're greenlit to we're opening the theater.
I think that's more of a testament to just how ridiculously talented Headgear is.
Yeah, true.
But still, like, they had plenty of knowledge and way more background material for Uzumaki.
They could have just literally copied the plot moment to moment and then, it's easy to say, just animated, but the pacing of it, like, that part shouldn't have been a factor. The way Ito assembled it, in my opinion, was perfect. Why mess with that? So, again, it didn't need to be made. Just read the manga. Watch Ep 1 if you're curious. Ep 1 is, you know, if you can stomach Ep 1, try watching the rest. If Ep 1 enrages you like it did me, then just stop right there.
Unless you need that rage.
Yeah. If you want to get really, really irrationally, violently angry at visual media, then go ahead and watch Ep 1.
Well, if you want to get really angry, read it first, then watch it.
Yeah, fair. That's true. That's the thing that also makes me angry, is that people are going to watch this and think, like, oh, is this what everybody is so hyped about? This sucks. And like, no, read the source. The source is a lot better.
Yeah.
That's why people are pissed at this, because I think it's extra infuriating because they tried so hard, at least in Ep 1, to match the visual style and the aesthetic and everything, which, again, if you pause the screen and look at shots, it looks great. Really accurate. Looks like, man, they really put the manga on, because that was my main criticism of trying to put Junji Ito anything in animation, right? It's just the way he draws things in a way that the horror is supposed to be presented, it's not really like a good fit for visual media. I think they really got so close with the visual side in Ep 1, but then just completely screwed the pooch with how they decided to assemble the story.
Ugh, so sad.
Okay. Let's see, I'll go. Mike, is there anything that you've watched recently that either makes you happy or sad?
Well, I haven't watched too much that's current, but I did get to Summer Anime Club and watched some good movies that are having anniversaries this year, most notably Macross Do You Remember Love, Urusei Yatsura 2 Beautiful Dreamer, both of which came out in 1984, and than Pompoka, which came out in 94. So those all actually went over pretty well with the current and recent alumni, or current and recent students. So glad that at least good movies still hold up. And then, let's see, otherwise been largely catching movies at the Palm Theater, like the 1977 Japanese horror movie House that's pretty insane that I caught earlier this month. Not sure if any of you are familiar with that movie.
No, I am not.
It is just bonkers. It's the first movie by a director who had mostly done art films and commercials up to that point. He was basically given the task, make a Japanese answer to Jaws without the budget for it. Like, something that would be big and scary in Japanese and put them on the map. And ended up, like, going to his elementary school age daughter for ideas that scared her and making just this strange 70s movie with deliberately terrible special effects and super cheerful female characters that seem like they're directly out of, like, Japanese commercials of the 70s or so, and getting eaten up by a house.
Okay.
Including a girl who gets eaten by a piano as she's playing it.
Okay. I'm intrigued, and
it looks insane.
Absolutely insane, and the making of is just as crazy as the movie. Like, the director was a atomic bomb survivor who lost most of his childhood friends in that and was trying to kind of convey to the generation that grew up after the war just how insane the wartime had been, something like that.
Oh.
The movie poster is, well, at least the one with the giant screaming red cat is awesome.
Oh, yeah. And the Palm decorated their theater, like, their front doors with the giant cat smile and glowing green eyes, like, just paper cutouts, but it was great.
Huh. Okay. Well, that's a cool, insane thing.
Whoa.
I want to watch this.
Yeah, I know. I'm in.
I'm not sure if it's still on Max, but it at least was at one point. It's also on Criterion Channel for sure.
Cool. Okay, well, that's a crazy, insane-looking thing that I was totally unaware of. All right. Thanks, Sensei Mike.
Mike, do you have Criterion Channel?
Yeah, absolutely.
I assume it's worth it then?
Yeah, I mean, I don't take as much advantage of it as I probably should, being bad at getting around to backlogs, but since I got, like, a launch deal when they first opened up of like 90 a year grandfathered in, so that's been pretty worth it.
Interesting. I've been curious, and so if they have movies like that on there, then
oh, they have an interesting mix. Like you know, it's a lot of older and foreign or modern foreign or documentary or other stuff like that, but then they have collections that are more relate, where they'll bring in some bigger Hollywood stuff for a bit. Like, they had a collection on movies with early synth soundtracks fairly recently that had a bunch of, like, Michael Mann stuff. And
Yeah, $100 a year. Interesting. Think about it.
But does it have my 15,000-pound sister? Because it doesn't have that, then where's the value?
At least does or did have pretty much all of the Showa-era Godzilla movies.
Great. I need another streaming service. It's definitely true. Okay.
And it has, you know, a whole bunch of Kurosawas and things like that, obviously, because you'd expect Criterion Channel to have Kurosawa for some reason.
Yeah, I think they got all that stuff out in the U.S. originally back in the early 2000s, late 90s and stuff. Okay. I want to go into
And unrelated tangent on fast production time, Castle of Cagliostro, which I had mentioned, had 7.5 months from green light to premiere and 5 months of animation production, which is bonkers.
That's crazy. Wow. And it's so good.
It is Yeah, it's yeah, that's. I haven't seen that one in a bit. I think at this point I would still put that as a top 10, probably a top 10 anime movie.
I need to watch it again before I pass
judgment. Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, that movie was one where in high school it was pretty much my friends and I, we'd either watch Cagliostro or Ninja Scroll or Akira or Terminator. That was what we watched.
Well, that one's weekend. Having its 45th anniversary in mid-December.
Good. Because I need to be that old. let's see here. We are almost out of time. I think there's some other things. There's definitely more things to discuss. But there's another one that I want to take a brief two-minute thing on, which is... actually, you know what? I'm not going to do that. We'll hold off on discussing the new Rodma 1/2 for another time.
I think that one can almost justify an episode if everybody's on board with it because of the era it's from. Or at least another segment. I don't know. I say it's just more than a few minutes.
Yes,
I feel.
Yes.
I feel.
So I stop there. I want to do a couple corrections, additions, things that I was listening back to some of our podcasts on a couple things. One, Pat Labor. In the episode, oh, you spend $70, get yourself a copy of everything. Well, no. Turns out right now, Pat Labor is, via normal means, completely inaccessible.
Really?
It's out of print.
Mm-hmm.
It's none of it. Pat Labor TV used to be streaming on High Dive. It's not currently. It is literally completely inaccessible.
Boo earns.
It's just, it's awful.
Yeah.
It is just awful.
That's a real shame.
Yeah. Okay, so take a breather from that. There was a question during the Berserk episode of when Berserk 97 came out, like, how close was that to the manga, or where is the manga there? And the end of the series is roughly issue 97. I didn't find my original Japanese 90 vol 13 that it would have been in, but vol 12 was there. So that volume 13 that had basically the episode 25 of the series came out in March of 97. This TV series aired starting in October of 97. So that was, you know, you could say like within a year of that chapter rolling out, the TV series started. So it was pretty close, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's there. I will also say again, I was out and was able to read a bunch of the Berserk, the new deluxe manga. I will say I really like the Memorial Edition soundtracks for reading Berserk manga. It's really nice. It's because I feel like the 97 series soundtrack series is incredible, but it's almost like it's too intense and it needs to be kind of almost watered down or metered out. And the Memorial Edition soundtrack is really great music that enhances your horror sensations and everything when you're reading the manga. So I like that. And my last addition thing is back to Pat Labor 2 episode. And in Pat Labor 2, they talk about a MiG flyover of Japan. I looked it up in, went to the wiki machine. In September of 1976, a Soviet pilot, Viktor Belenko, did a defection flight from near Vladivostok over to Japan up in Hokkaido. He was intending on landing at a military airstrip, but due to poor visibility, he couldn't find it and ended up doing kind of a near crash landing at the Hakodate airstrip because it was too small, too short for his airplane. He defected to the U.S. Of kind of particular note there as well was that the JSDF sent out two fighters to go try and intercept him, but they couldn't, basically they couldn't find him because they had a bad radar and they were unable to locate him.
Oh.
So I think that's the thing that was referenced in Pat Lepore 2 about the MiG flyover. And apparently when this pilot landed at the airport, he had about 30 seconds of fuel left.
Oh, wow.
And he almost crashed into a 727 that was trying to take off at the time. And then the Hakodate air traffic controller contacted the SDF, but they just told him to call the police.
Not my problem, man.
Which I thought was pretty hilarious.
That sounds, like, yeah, I don't know, very Japan somehow.
Yeah, I thought that was, I thought that that kind of gave me a chuckle. Okay,
I'm just
so,
imagining the Pat Lepore crew answering that call.
Yep, pretty much. So those are a couple of additions and notes I had from stuff. Any other corrections, additions, anything like that that anyone had of note?
Nope,
nothing from me.
Okay. Anything else related to our very rapid roll up of 2.5 seasons of anime that anyone else wants to mention?
I have one small one to mention that I forgot about briefly is the quality assurance in Another World, which is from the summer season. It's a video game isekai series, but it's about like QA testers. This guy's basically a QA tester for a game, and he got trapped inside it along with a bunch of other QA testers, and like he's like dutifully filing bugs, and bugs do get fixed. Like they encounter a town where people are all stuck T-posing, and so he submits a bug report on his magic tablet, and then the next day everybody's walking around normally. It's humorous in those kind of ways. He like tries to find gaps in walls and things like that, and gruesome and others were like some of the, they call them debuggers, are basically trapped for eternity in bugs, like floating, you know, halfway between the ground and they're just stuck, unable to interact with things. It's interesting in that it also tackles the kind of like, what do we do? It basically does what I like, which is for an isekai, which is to acknowledge the other world exists and they're trying to get back, or at least still dealing with that question, which I like. So that's that show. It's not animated very well, but I don't know, if you like that, it could be interesting.
I did watch the first step of that, and I thought it was interesting enough, and then I forgot about it and moved on to other things.
Yeah, it's like that.
That interesting enough though, that kind of synopsis you gave there, like almost sounds like if like that could almost be like a Junji Ito thing if it were done as like a horror or something, or it's like, oh, these people are there and these people are just like, these bug people are just trapped inside walls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they keep coming across different people who are like basically trapped in the game somewhere, and I don't know, I really find that very interesting because it is kind of horrific to think about.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that light note, I say thanks for listening, and until next time, this is AMO Kenzoku saying Saraba.